Today, the reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5. Canto 5, the wind is blown up. Chapter 1? What? Text number 21. So I have to get up. Canto 5, Chapter 1, text number 21. There's no sufficient way.
Avastanam,
to his abode. avak manasam, beyond the description of mind and words. Kshayam, the planet. Avyavritam, extraordinarily situated. Pravartayan, departing. Agamat, returned. Translation. Lord Brahma was then worshipped by Manu, who respectfully satisfied him as well as he could. Priyavrata and Narada also looked upon Brahma with no tinges of resentment. Having engaged Priyavrata in accepting his father's request, Lord Brahma returned to his abode, Satyaloka, which is indescribable even by the endeavor of mundane mind or words. So this is the purport. Manu was certainly very satisfied that Lord Brahma had persuaded his son Priyavrata to take the responsibility for ruling the world. Priyavrata and Narada were also very satisfied, although Brahma had forced Priyavrata to accept the management of worldly affairs, thus breaking his vow to remain brahmachari and completely engaged in devotional service. Narada and Priyavrata did not look upon Brahma with resentment. Narada was not at all sorry that he had been frustrated in making Priyavrata a disciple. Both Priyavrata and Narada were exalted personalities who knew how to respect Lord Brahma. Therefore, instead of looking upon Brahma with resentment, they very feelingly offered him their respect. Lord Brahma then returned to his celestial abode known as Satyaloka, which is described here as being impeccable and being unapproachable by words. It is stated in this verse that Lord Brahma returned to his residence, which is as important as his own personality. Lord Brahma is the creator of this universe and the most exalted personality within it. His lifetime is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text number 17. We'll just have to direct the get this out of the way. Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Ahar Yet Brahmano Vidu Ratrim Yuga Sahasrantim Santam Teho Ratra Vidojana. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day, and also such also is the duration of his night. So it's a fantastically long time. Sahasra Yuga Paryantam. The total duration of the four yugas is 4,300,000 years. And when that is multiplied 1,000 times, it equals 12 hours in the life of Brahma. Therefore, we cannot factually comprehend even 12 hours of Brahma's life, and to say nothing of the 100 years that constitute his lifetime. How then can we understand his abode? The Vedic literatures describe that in Satyaloka, there is no birth, death, old age, or disease. In other words, since Satyaloka is situated next to Brahmaloka, or the Brahman effulgence, it is almost as good as Vaikuntha Loka. Lord Brahma's abode is practically indescribable from our present status. Therefore, it has been described as avan manasa gochara, or beyond the description of our words and the imagination of our minds. The Vedic literatures thus describe the abode of Lord Brahma, yad vai paratyam tad uparameshtyam nayatra soko najara namityu matir nakod vega, in Satyaloka, which is situated many millions and billions of miles away. There is no lamentation, nor is there old age, death, anxiety, or the influence of enemies. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Ithinamine, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharne, Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschata Dishatayana, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jaya. So, we're reading this story about how Priyavrata, his intended course in life is changed from that of being a renunciate. Now he has agreed to become a householder and an administrator. That's a complete, you know, 24, it's like a, how do you say, 360 degree turn from what he was supposed to do. The life of a renunciate has got nothing to do with family life, with the children, all of those household affairs, earning money, maintaining a family. But now he's plunged right into that. But amazingly, he is willing to do that because the urgency is there. And there's a lot of pressure being put upon him. His grandfather, Lord Brahma, has made a special trip all the way from Satyaloka to visit him. And as soon as he agreed to do it, Lord Brahma, very busy, he went back to his abode. And witnessing were Manu and the spiritual master of Priyavrata, Narada Dev, and also Lord Shiva is there. He's also witnessing. So great, great personalities are there. These are the top people that play a part in the affairs of the material world. And so Priyavrata, it's very hard for him to say, no, I refuse this order. He cannot do that. And he accepts it very humbly. So sometimes as devotees, we also get an instruction or a strong request to perform some service. So we can remember the example of Priyavrata and do that, and take on that service. Sometimes when we're a new devotee, there'll be some, you know, bathroom cleaning, there'll be garbage carrying, all that kind of thing has to be done by somebody. Prabhupada, he said that When a new man comes to join our society, especially if he's very rich family, then I give him some very menial task, like pot washing or something like that. And if he's able to do it, then he passes the test. So that was Prabhupada's system, that no matter who the person is, whether he's very exalted or not so exalted, giving some hard task, something which he would not consider doing voluntarily, But if he's willing to do it and he gets the job done, then that person can be considered a fit person. At least that's one of the qualifications that person would make a good devotee, because he's willing to do anything for Krishna. And so it is Priyavrata. He's in that position. He's giving up his favorite, most cherished goal in life to be personal servant of Narada. And he has to take control of the whole material affairs of the world for his grandfather, which is surely a great task. So, there was an occasion when I was in the Bhaktivedanta Manor temple in England. There was a similar situation. Just to tell you a little bit about the history, it's an interesting historical fact. The London Temple had become, it was going to be evacuated, the very place, the famous place which was started by the first few disciples that came over, Mukunda and others. They had found this nice little place near the British Museum, and it was the temple for many years. Prabhupada liked it a lot. There was Radha, the London Ishwara were installed there. But the time came that we had to leave there because the lease ran out and they were not going to renew it, the owners of the building. There was a usage issue going on. So the devotees, they had to find a new place, and eventually they came up with they decided on a building on Soho Street, which is now currently the temple in London. So, but the devotees had no money. They had to buy the building and they had to renovate it also. And it was a tremendous task. So they decided to create an elite collecting party of the top lady distributors would become the collecting party. And they needed a person who would control this and organize this collecting party so that the everything would go on smoothly, and the ladies who would do the collecting, all of their needs would be met. They would have a nice place to stay, like privacy and everything like that. And they would just simply dedicate themselves for as long as it took to purchase this building. And so there was a certain devotee from America, I don't know if anybody mentioned his name, Tulsidas. Actually, Tulsidas was a very fine devotee, and he was on track to become a sannyasi. So they requested him, "Can put off your aspirations to be a sannyasi, and please take care of this lady's collecting party." And he did it. He did it very, very well. And these ladies, they were collecting money through donations in this way and that way for maybe a year and a half or so. And eventually, the money was raised and the building was purchased. And I'm sure some of you have visited this Soho Street temple. It's a very wonderful temple. It's not very big, but it has a restaurant. It has a beautiful temple room. Deities of Radha Lalanishwara installed there, and there is sufficient ashram space for the devotees, and it is a very dynamic preaching place. Lots of devotees have been made there. They started a program, a new bhakti program, whereby all of the millions of people who are out there shopping, we try to interest a few people to come for lunch every day for free, and then the devotees would sit down and preach to the people who came for the lunch, And out of those, a few were selected, or a few volunteered to come out and become a, take a trial, a trial training period in Bhaktivedanta Manor. It was a few, about 20, 30 miles away. And they would basically be devotees who were put through a bhakti program, a very introductory bhakti program. And out of that bhakti program, some would agree to stay permanently. And in that way, literally hundreds of devotees were made over the years. So this great event, or this great attempt to establish a new temple in London, was very, very successful and undoubtedly pleasing to Prabhupada very, very much. But it required the sacrifice of this particular devotee's aspirations to become a sannyasi, and that was put off. He very graciously agreed to do that, service, and it was had a tremendously beneficial effect on the preaching in England. So we can just imagine, by comparison of scale, what type of service a Priyavrata was taking. He's been managing the whole material universe, and he's taking over all of the work for the management of the different planets and the population growth that is required on those planets. Because as you realize, the planets are not just pretty balls floating in space. They're actually going to be the residence of so many living entities. Krishna has to accommodate all those living entities. They have to have a nice place to take birth in. And so that has to be arranged by Priyavrata, amongst so many other services. So, as I was thinking about this this temple in London, I was also thinking about another incident in the history of ISKCON, which is well known by some, but some of the older devotees, not so much the newer devotees. And that was during the earlier years. There was a program in America called the Radha Damoda bus party. They had a number of buses. There was a nice BTG covering their service. And they would go from college to college and distributing books. And they covered the whole North United States. And literally hundreds and hundreds of devotees were made. And thousands of books were distributed. It was highly successful. And it was led up by His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami. However, there was some dissatisfaction on the part of the temple presidents of North America with this party, because rightly or wrongly, maybe in enthusiasm and youthful ignorance or whatever you might call it, when these parties would pull into the local temple where they were distributing, there was always an attempt to steal or attract some of the brahmacharis of that temple to join the bus party, increase the party numbers and increase the book distribution that way. So this was agitating the temple presidents, and this was happening almost universally all over North America. The temple presidents, they banded together and they made a petition to Srila Prabhupada to control this or put an end to it. So this poaching of the temples of these young brahmacharis and putting them into the bus party. So you would think that Srila Prabhupada would support the distribution of his books and the collection of huge amounts of money, but actually Srila Prabhupada saw it the other way. And he actually put more emphasis on these temples. The temples were becoming depleted, and the temple presidents could not run their temples properly. And Prabhupada saw that the temples were very, very important. We had, as he said, we're spending gallons of blood just to bring people to our temples. And we're spending millions of dollars just to establish these temples for Krishna and for the people to have darshan and practice Krishna consciousness. So, Srila Prabhupada basically was very upset that this practice was going on, the stealing of devotees. And he came out in favor of the temple presidents, and more or less at that time, the Radha Damodar Bas Party began to dwane, that began to become less and less. Tamal Krishna Maharaj himself was ordered by Srila Prabhupada. Well, I think Tamal Krishna himself, he said he was so, you know, Prabhupada was so angry at him that he was spoiling his temples. And he was so angry that Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna became so dejected. He said, "Prabhupada, I'll go to China." So Prabhupada didn't say anything, and Tamal Krishna left the room. And then again next day there was some more talks. And then so when Prabhupada saw Tamal Krishna, he said, "About your proposal to go to China, I decided that is a very good thing." So Tamal Krishna was never expecting Prabhupada to take him up on it, but that's what happened. And of course, every story has a happy ending. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he went to China, he made a base in Hong Kong. Many, many books were translated and distributed, and his work there was a great success. So Prabhupada, I'm not sure if Srila Prabhupada was still present on the planet when that was going on, but anyway, so the story has a happy ending. Again, another devotee, he takes a great, he takes on a great service and a great loss to his own personal prestige and his, you know, his life and what the things that he wanted to do were put aside in favor of what Srila Prabhupada wanted him to do. And interestingly, by comparison, the extremely controlled and I don't have the right words, but the way in which Narada Muni and Priyavrata, they acquiesce to Lord Brahma's request in this case of Tamal Krishna going to China, he acquiesced and he did it. So this is another great story in this one, how doing something which you don't really want to do, or it's opposed to your personal ambitions and aspirations, but doing it nevertheless, it can have amazing results. Also, another good lesson from this story is the fact that we must have good relationship between devotees. The relationship between Radha Damodar and the North American temples was extremely tense, extremely tense. And only Srila Prabhupada was able to solve that problem, because the behavior was not right. Lord Brahma, he can get whatever he wants. He's the Lord of the universe. And he's in control of everything. He can just come along and say, "Okay, Priyavrata, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing that." No, he asks very, very sweetly. And he gives a long preamble to his request. And he's constantly addressing him as, my boy, like this, exactly, young man." It's very sweet the way he addresses Priyavrata. And Priyabrata is, you know, he has not, he has no way of being able to produce Lord Brahma. So the type of relationship between all of the devotees in that story is very, it's a good lesson. And the mistakes of our ISKCON devotees is also a lesson for us, that we should approach gently and deal with devotees gently, even if we're in a position of authority and we have the final say. So this is some of the things that have come out of this particular purport. So this tells us that in Krishna consciousness there is not only our own sadhana which we have to take care of, but there is a culture which has to be developed, a culture of a particular type of behavior amongst devotees. So that culture is somewhat opposed to the culture that we, most of us, have come from. We come from a society of material enjoyment, where we get what we want, and we fight for it. We fight, we compete for those things. In the Krishna conscious society, such kind of culture is not practiced. Rather, we have an authority system which comes down from Srila Prabhupada himself, and according to his arrangement through GBC and through temple presidents, department heads, and other kinds of authorities. So in this way, by fulfilling the wishes of our authorities, we can actually please Srila Prabhupada, we can please the previous acharyas, and we can please even Lord Brahma, who's aware of all of these things going on. So when we think of Lord Brahma and what Priyabrata is now having to face, we should also think, we should spend some time considering what this universal arrangement is all about. It's all about facilitating the accommodation of fallen living entities. And if you consider how great these personalities are, and if you consider how we as living entities, fallen conditioned souls, are also being accommodated here in this material world, we are also being accommodated in this material world by the efforts of Lord Brahma. Our Lord Brahma has made a very nice planet for us, and he's maintaining it. The nice sunshine and rain and so many things are going on, especially here in Mayapur. The climate is so wonderful. But this is simply for our maintenance and our living facility. Krishna's aim is to bring back all these fallen conditioned souls back to Godhead. They belong to him. And Krishna is missing the association of all of these living entities who are individually contained some particular rasa or some particular a feature of their behavior and the personality, which is unique, and that is meant for Krishna's pleasure, because every living entity has been created from Krishna himself. Krishna has created all the living entities they are part and parcel of him. And the idea is that they will change their rebellious nature and become devotees. So that is the whole purpose of having so many planets filled with so many living entities and so many different species, 8,400,000 species of life are available for the living entities. And they have to take birth here and be guided. So we are also, we have personal experience of the other part of Krishna's responsibility. Not only he has sent Lord Brahma to create these planets, but he's also sending his pure devotees. In recent living memory, we had the association of Srila Prabhupada. And before that, we know the history of the previous acharyas. So it's not that Krishna is creating a dump somewhere. Just like in the material world, you have so much garbage. People don't know what to do with the garbage, so they make a garbage mountain. They just pile it up and pack it down. And everywhere you go in the Western world, you can see on the outside of the cities, you can see these big mountains of garbage just sitting there. So Krishna is not like that. These planets are not garbage dumps to dump the useless devotees. These are places for reformation of devotees. And so those great souls who are compliant with Krishna's desires, they come to this world and they spread knowledge of Krishna, just like Srila Prabhupada. And so we are the lucky recipients of that and of that munificence on part of Krishna and his pure devotees. So this is a great, experience, a living experience of universal affairs from the good side. We're on the lucky side of this arrangement because having met or coming into contact with Srila Prabhupada directly or indirectly through his servants, we now have the opportunity to return back home, back to Godhead. So this is this story of Lord Brahma, Priyavrata and everything, it actually, you know, we can relate it to our own situation. Somewhere out there is a Brahma who's looking after us. And there is a Shiva, there is a Narada Muni, and he is there in the Panchatattva. This is not some fairy story. This is not some, you know, creation of a fertile mind. This is reality. And on the other side, there is the dark side of this reality. The living entity comes to this material world and he messes up and he dives straight into an ocean of sense gratification and he becomes entrapped by the three modes of material nature. He's trapped by the modes and according to the modes he has to take different types of bodies. So he considers himself to be an enjoyer. Purusho prakriti sohi bhukte prakriti janpunan karanam guna sangasya sad asadhyoni janmasu. This tells us the mechanism by which the living entity is entrapped. Just like flies get stuck in the cobweb of a spider, in the same way the living entity becomes entrapped within these three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And by the combination of these modes, he has to take a body which is matching his combination of mode of nature, which he is attached to. And in this way, he takes birth again and again and again. And sometimes in different births, he becomes attached to different modes, and therefore he's able to change his situation. He's able to change from one
particular species to another species. And then through what Prabhupada calls the evolutionary process, he comes up to the human platform. Now the human platform is described as partially being in the mode of goodness. That is to say, there is some inclination to inquire about the absolute truth. It is innate within that particular mode. Not only that, it is described that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that each and every living entity, when he falls from the spiritual world, he actually contains within him pure love of God. It's actually enshrined within the heart of the living entity. But the living entity is unaware of it. In this human form, if that living entity is so lucky that he comes into contact with a pure devotee, either physically or by book or by hearing about or by instruction or by association, that living entity can revive his pure Krishna consciousness. And that is the beginning of the story of going back home, back to Godhead. So that is our business. We are in that position, we are fully knowledgeable about Krishna consciousness, enough to say that we can explain something to other people. We may not be fully knowledgeable, but at least whatever we know, we can preach to others. So we have an obligation to save our fellow jivas, our fellow living entities who are struggling in all of the different species of life. We have to benedict them with the mercy of Krishna. So that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special message, his special mission, that he would start the Sankirtan movement and spread Krishna consciousness in this hellish material world of Kali Yuga. So this chanting of Hare Krishna is very, very important. It is specially meant for this Kali Yuga. It is specially meant for bringing all of the living entities out from the modes of near material nature into pure goodness. So our business is simply to help Srila Prabhupada, help the previous acharyas, and by doing so, we will earn their kindness to send us home back to Godhead, so we can avoid again taking birth in this material world. So this is this whole story of Priyavrata, Narad Muni, and Lord Brahma. It's a window into, it's a little time capsule, you can say, of what is going on out there. We've heard of Lord Brahma, we've heard of Shiva, we've heard of Narada Muni flying planet to planet. Well, what's going on? This is a little window into that experience. And we should know that we're not the only devotees. There's millions and millions of devotees throughout this universe. And they're on different planets. We happen to be on this planet, but we know that they're there. So this is a very, very colorful story, very interesting, and just a little picture of what's going on in the material universe. So I think I'll finish there. Time is getting late. If anybody has a question or comment, please raise your hand. You are the first one. Underneath the switch. If you'd like to come up, just use this microphone.
Well, my question is about this applicability in our life, these instructions, especially about authority. We are attending many of these classes about this, and now I have a doubt, because if we have an instruction from our spiritual master. And then some higher authority asks another thing. What should we do? Usually, I think that we should consult our spiritual master about that. But in this case of this history, Theravada Maharaj didn't consult Narada Muni, he just accepted. Could you explain this?
Sorry, what was the last part?
Because Theravada Maharaj just accepted the instruction of Brahma, Lord Brahma, against his spiritual master. Without consulting again his spiritual master, for me it appears to be natural if someone tells us to do something against our instruction, our spiritual master instruction. Usually we should go again to our spiritual master and ask what I should do. I have these two instructions, but Prabhupada Maharaj didn't consult again. It's my doubt.
That's a very good question. It's a tough question. We cannot say that we know everything that transpired in that meeting. This is just like a little window into that particular meeting between these great souls. I don't think we know everything that they said to each other. The main things are mentioned. And certainly, when Lord Brahma was speaking, he was not only speaking to Priyavrata, he was speaking to Lord Shiva and Narada Muni, Manu. They were all participants. I'm just speculating, I shouldn't speculate from the Vyasan, of course, but I'm just reading through the lines that because none of them replied when Lord Brahma, he asked directly to Priyavrata to take up the business of universal affairs, none of them objected. In other words, I would understand that it was a foregone conclusion amongst them ahead of time. So I would look at it like that, that you would think there would be some conversation as a result of this, but there isn't. It's a silence. Lord Brahma gets on his airplane and goes. So it must have been a done deal, as we say, prior. But I don't know, I shouldn't say that, sitting here. So far as ISKCON, devotees have had mishaps or unhappy events in their life on account of the spiritual master leaving his post. It does say very clearly in the Haribhakti Vilas, and it's mentioned also in Nectar of Devotion, that when a devotee selects a spiritual master, he should live with that prospective spiritual master for a minimum of 1 year. That means live with, be in the ashram with, be very close to, and ask many questions. Tadviti pranipadena pariprasna, pariprasnena. That is the way, that should be there. And that should be exhaustive. That pariprasna should be, of course, pari means gentle, but prasna means question. You have to ask your spiritual master that you're choosing, you have to ask him the hard question. Does he know this? Does he know that? You know, so many things have to be asked of the spiritual master. You have to pepper him with questions. Does he excite me? Does his knowledge base is it sufficient for me? Because all devotees are different. Some devotees are extremely intellectually gifted. So they may require a very gifted intellectual spiritual master. Or they may get bored later on. And similarly, if you live with your selected spiritual master to be, you will be able to see the fine points of his behavior. What is he really attached to? What is he really watching on the internet? You know, you sit there next to him and see what he's watching on the internet. What is he studying? What does he do with his life? What are his hobbies? So you know everything about that person. But this process does not go on very much in ISKCON. Devotees do not test their spiritual masters. And therefore, so an untested spiritual master can actually be harboring some anattas which come out later. When there's 100 disciples or 1,000 disciples and so many ladies and so many marriages, then that spiritual master is unable to deal with that pressure and he has a problem. So it's up to the disciple to test the spiritual master very, very deeply. So any other question? Okay, we'll call it there. Rantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.